Well, then, trying to get us down the direction of potential return to sports here. And the Premier League is at the headline of this Thursday with reports from England that June 17th, just really 3 weeks away, we could see the Premier League back in action and on the field with a couple of games to kind of get the schedule up to even and then a continuation of the rest of the schedule. If the reports are accurate, and we still wait for confirmation from the Premier League on this, matches would begin Wednesday, June 17th, so it's less than 3 weeks now, with Man City playing Arsenal, Aston Villa playing Sheffield United, and then a full round of matches. The next set of fixtures would be the weekend of June 20 to 21, and if they double up here, they're going to be able here to get the rest of the season done and finished by August 1st or 2nd. So that's the big sports news globally and for a lot of our viewers. As we welcome you to Lunch Talk Live here on NBCSN, Mike Tirico, glad to have you with us on a Thursday where the guest list is loaded as usual. In a few minutes, the manager of the Indians, Terry Francona, will join us. A little bit later on in the broadcast, Chris Mullen will join us, the former NBA great. We'll talk college, pro basketball, and also what he's been doing to help out New York. Chris Sims will join us. We'll talk about what's ahead with the National Football League and the owners who have a vote scheduled later today on some new rules as well. As always, if you miss anything, podcast, you can catch up on the whole show. Our NBC Sports YouTube channel, you can go back and watch the whole deal. Let's bring in right away Robbie Earle to discuss what's going on in the Premier League. And Robbie, the news continues to be incremental growth, small-sided training, with training with the full squads, getting closer in a couple of weeks, and now a date potentially on the schedule to get the Premier League back. What's been your view of all of this happening in the last couple of weeks?
That this has been a huge week for English football, Mike. Make no mistake, the Premier League, if the Premier League doesn't get started and finish this season, I'm not just talking about the 20 clubs in the Premier League, the highest level of football in England, but there's a pyramid that goes below that, and the Premier League monies gets trickled down and filtered through that pyramid. And it was so important that the Premier League made a couple of big steps forward. And I think we've seen those. You've mentioned the full contact training that started this week that was approved by all 20 clubs. So we can go back to 11v11 contact because it's a contact sport. And then the second thing that had to happen, we needed a date. We needed to draw a line in the sand and say, when will the Premier League restart? Now we've got that date. We've been told from reliable sources and we're still waiting, we have to say, Mike, for the official word from the Premier League. And you can imagine it's probably breaking now as we're on air. So maybe you can do a little reminder to people after this. But June the 17th is going to be the start of the two games that are the extra games that teams need to play to catch up. So Manchester City versus Arsenal is one. Aston Villa versus Sheffield United in particular is a huge game for both those clubs. Aston Villa sit in the bottom three at the moment. If they were to win that game, they go out of the relegation spots. Sheffield United, they're vying for a European Champions League even position. You know, their first season back in the Premier League under Chris Wilder has been a magnificent season. So two important games to kick off June the 17th. And then we go to the full weekend that will be June the 20th and 21st. And there is some talk about there might be a game on Friday the 19th, a few on Saturday, a few on Sunday, possibly even a Monday game. We yet to fully understand that. But that will be the start when all the teams will play and the season will kick off. And so exciting news, I think, for Premier League fans that it looks like Project Restart has had a real kickstarter in getting going. We're looking forward to the next 3 weeks.
Robbie, one of the things we are continuing to ask as the NHL and the NBA and all the leagues start putting out their ideas, or in the NHL's case, a concrete plan on a way to get back to play. One of the things we keep asking is what's going to happen when positive tests happen. Well, the Premier League has had 2,752 tests done to this point, and there have been 12 positive tests, yet the short side, small side training is continuing. So that may give us a little hint as to how things might go going forward with all sports around the world.
Yeah, I think all sports, a lot of sports will be looking how the English Premier League do it and what's contained. You've talked about the number of testing and the number of positive tests so far have been really low. And once a test, something comes back positive, that person's self-isolated, taken away from the group so they can't infect the other players there. I think the thing to say that unanimously the 20 clubs have so far voted for the resume to full contact. They voted for this date, although we're hearing one or two clubs would prefer maybe maybe a week later start than June 17th, mm-hmm. somewhere around June the 26th. But listen, we're never going to have a perfect storm in this situation. But I do think that the confidence the Premier League have taken, the steps they've moved forward, is because it's been underpinned by that high number of testing, being tested twice a week, 50 or 60 people in your franchise, players, auxiliary staff, coaching staff. I think because the numbers have been kept so low, there's a confidence now that the Premier League can move forward and hope to hopefully not only restart the Premier League, but finish the Premier League around that August 1st, 2nd date that you talked about.
And for a lot of us in the U.S. watching what's going to happen with sports here, this may be some of the answer if there is a positive test as it shut down the sport in its entirety. Let me ask you one last question, Robbie, and thanks for hopping on short notice here. The Bundesliga in Germany has restarted. We've seen a couple of weeks of matches, fixtures there. What have you seen in the quality and level of play there as they've come back?
Been hugely impressed. Intensity of football. Nobody really shirking away from challenges or having full body contact. Players committed to the game, the concentration levels and fitness levels, I think, have been excellent. I'd have to say as well, and I was a sceptic of this, Mike, before. I'm a football purist, as you very well know. I don't like my football diluted. But adding piping in some noise by one of the broadcasters was an option for viewers to have, so you could watch it with or without the crowd noise. I have to say, that little bit of crowd noise, that little bit of cheering, that little bit of anticipation as a ball round the goal, I thought was excellent. And as an old sceptic as I am, that might be something the Premier League have looked at and offer maybe to Premier League fans around the world.
Well, like American sports fans, there's one guarantee. You're never going to find anything that gets unanimous approval with Premier League fans. But we can get back perhaps to the debates and the conversations if this does happen. We'll keep you updated on the news. Robbie, thanks for hopping on at short notice. We appreciate it.
Pleasure, Mike.
All right, let's switch gears here a little bit to Major League Baseball. And that's the next item that we continue to watch, because there seems to be the typical players union, baseball ownership, bit of a rough edge to try to figure out how to get back. There are plans going back and forth, the Players Association in their necks. Meantime, the coaches, the managers, GMs, they're waiting. And that includes Terry Francona, the manager of the Cleveland Indians, who joins us now. So you're back in Cleveland. You drove from Tucson to Cleveland, is that right? How long did that take, Terry?
I did, Mike. It took me 3 days. It's a pretty good haul.
Anything that you saw, any little bit of Americana that you can share for those of us who've been in one state or one neighborhood for the last 8-9 weeks or so?
You know, part of the reason I wanted to drive was I wanted to stop. You know, one of my best friends in life is Brad Mills, who's, you know, our bench coach. And he had to leave spring training because of a personal tragedy in his family. And I really wanted to stop and see them. So that was part of the reason I drove. So I kind of went out of the way a little bit and went through the Dallas area. Even as directionally challenged as I am, I know that's not on the way. But I really wanted to stop and see him and his family. And I'm glad I did.
That's nice. Good for you. We're glad that you made it safe and glad you're able to check in on a longtime friend. What are you hearing? What sense do you get here about baseball coming back in the next month or so?
Well, a couple things. I do think Major League Baseball is doing everything in their power to be prepared to play if we get a window. And by window, I mean whether it's safe, whether we're not taken away from other people, things like that. The one thing I do wish is, I understand there needs to be negotiations. I mean, it's a billion-dollar industry. I think I would prefer it if it was done in private and maybe not through the media as much, just out of respect for the 40 million people that are out of jobs right now. I think it would be a little better form to do it quietly. And again, I know it needs to happen. I just wish it wouldn't be so public.
You know the players so well. It was where you really got your roots in this game, and your players have almost universally loved playing for you. So you have great connection there. Do you understand their view when they say, hey, we already said we'll play for a prorated salary. Now you want to just go because the revenue is going to be reduced on a percentage of that. Do you understand where their hurdle is in this process right now?
You know, I think I probably have an understanding of all the sides, you know, because I was a player. Mm-hmm. I've been a coach. I'm a manager now. Unfortunately, in our industry, there's been a distrust probably from both sides for a long time. And every time there's a negotiation, it doesn't seem as amicable as the public would wish. The hope would be that when push comes to shove, that part of the game gets done, and then we can go about enjoying and celebrating the game of baseball. But it's not fun for any of us to live through this.
Yeah, no doubt. Can I ask you about the minor leagues before I get to major leagues? Because you lived your life for many years on the buses, the minor leagues. We saw you in The Last Dance, the Michael Jordan documentary, to remind people of that phase of your life. I feel like the restructuring of minor league baseball, the conversation about paying minor leaguers right now, it's going to be really hard for the prospects within your organization to have that normal year of preparation for the big leagues. Where do you think the biggest toll will be on the development of players as we go through this very strange season, if we have one at all?
Well, you just said it, and it's not, I mean, obviously these kids aren't making very much money, which we all know, but the development, to lose a year of development is probably what's keeping our organization and not just us, but everyone up at night trying to figure out, because you can't get that back. And when you're, you know, age 18 to 22, the most important thing for these kids to be doing right now is playing. And that's what's being taken away. And it creates a ton of anxiety for all of us.
Let's talk about spring training 2.0. Let's say labor stuff gets settled and they say, Terry, here's the good news. We're going and we're going to play July 4th, whatever it is. You got 3 weeks or 4 weeks or so. What kind of things do you start doing right away to try to figure out how to get your guys ready again?
Well, we've already been doing that, Mike. We've been having Zoom calls with the players, with the organization, and we've been doing it for a while. We don't have a lot of answers yet, to be quite honest, because Major League Baseball doesn't have answers. What we're going to do is follow the guidelines and the protocols that are in place and then try to make it as easy and as organized as possible for the players so they can get ready. And that's going to be quite a feat because there's going to be, as you can imagine, a lot of guidelines in place, as there should be. But our main goal will be to facilitate it where our players can get ready the easiest way possible.
All right, have your pitchers that you've been in communication with been finding a way to play catch, to keep their arms some sort of direction of readiness that when they get in for spring training 2.0, they'll be able to ramp up a little bit quicker than in the January, February ramp up to normal spring training?
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. And our pitching guys have assured me that we will not have enough hitters to keep our pitchers occupied. That's how ready they are. I think that was the one thing we really tried to keep an eye on during this time away from the game. If our pitchers fell behind, we were going to be playing catch up the entire time. And I really believe our pitchers have done an excellent job in keeping their arms stretched out to a point. We didn't want them to get too far out, but to a point where they can actually start to compete pretty quickly. And we're fortunate, again, we have good pitching coaches, but we have pitchers that are so diligent, so conscientious, that we really think they're going to be ready.
It's funny. I just thought of this. I'm worrying about pitchers and their arms because that's always the thing you worry about. There aren't many places for hitters to stay sharp during a pandemic. I mean, it may take a while for the guys with the bats to get their timing back.
It's a really good point. You know, with the pitchers, it's almost easier to check in on them. You know, they have a side day one day. They have a long toss one day. Everything's a schedule. With our position players, it's been hit or miss. You know, do they have a facility? Do they have actually a live pitcher where they can actually go face? Pitchers don't want to face a hitter in a cage. So, you know, again, there's going to be some catch up to do with the position players. But I do think if we, like you said, a spring training 2.0, 3 weeks for position players would actually probably be okay. I think we always worry about the pitchers more than the position players.
Terry, what were you most excited about with this Indian season way back when things were normal that may have you fired up about getting back on the field? And let's face it, if they're playing and we're counting what we're doing, you're going to try to win this whole thing. So what has you most excited about that?
You know, every year it doesn't take a lot to get me excited. I love the fact that when I stand up in front of our guys in the first meeting and I say, hey, if we do this the right way, we will have a chance to win. And I'm not sure every manager can actually say that. And I love going through challenges with guys that I respect and I care about. And that's how I feel about the guys in Cleveland, not just the players, but the entire group. And that's what kind of gets my juices going. And since we haven't had that, man, I miss it. So if we get back together, again, I know there's going to be challenges, but that's, I guess, part of why I feel good is because I think our guys will just view it as another challenge and attack it like they always do.
In a very interesting division with a bunch of teams in different places, a lot of teams with some young talent, the AL Central. We don't know what the divisions are going to look like. That's, I was thinking along the old lines, we may be back in the three divisions and 10 teams. Who knows what it's going to look like when we get out there. Hey, lastly, the Jordan documentary brought back some of your time. One of my buddies, John Courtright, was the pitcher who faced Michael Jordan his first at-bat, and he flew out to right field in that opening at-bat. Terry, what was that circus night like to be the guy who's putting Michael Jordan's name in a lineup card for the first time?
You know, the biggest thing I can say is it had all the makings of turning into a circus for a number of reasons, and it never did. And I give Michael all the credit for that. What the biggest thing he did was he respected the game of baseball, and he respected the people in the game of baseball, and it made everything work. And for that, I mean, I'll always be grateful for how he handled it. From the very first day, he turned into a Birmingham Baron, and he didn't have to do that. And it was noticeable, and it was appreciated. And I guess it shouldn't be surprising, knowing how well he did in other arenas. It shouldn't be surprising that he was that type of guy.
It's absolutely who he is. Great to catch up with you. We appreciate the time. Glad you made the drive safe. We're able to check in on Millsy. And when you guys come through Detroit, hopefully we'll be able to say hello. Thanks for a few minutes, Terry.
Thanks, Mike. I hope so. Take care, man.
You too. Terry Francona there. Premier League at the start. Busy morning. We'll continue on with Chris Sims. We'll talk about what the NFL might be doing to change the look of football in the fall. Chris is coming up. Oh, he's plugging the mug, too. What a shock.
Give me some quarterbacks in the league right now or quarterbacks in the past that are also that alliteration with first name and the last name.
Oh, that's a good one. Blake Bortles.
There you go.
Yes. So there's one. All right.
Yeah. I'll stay with the Bees. I'll stay with the Bees and go Bubby Brister with you.
Oh, good one. Tim Tebow.
There you go. One's a starter, one's a nice back.
Cousins. Like
Kirk Cousins. There you go. Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. And who's your other one? Oh, Case Keenum.
Kirk Cousins. You're going just for the sound, not the spelling. It's a K and then a C.
I agree. I questioned it, but yeah. You know, I just got to go with the host every now and then, right?
Here's Chris Sims, the host of the Chris Sims Unbuttoned Podcast. Do you guys have mugs, by the way, with the Chris Sims Unbuttoned Podcast logo? I don't know if those are around.
Oh, you haven't seen that? You're
one,
very
so.
Funny. You're sarcastic.
Oh,
are you just jealous? There's not a Lunch Talk Live mug yet? Is that what it is? Is that what you're feeling like, you know, disrespected this way?
No. The show's on TV. This is the way we are, you know. Our generation, Chris, just kind of plays it a little understated. We don't have to like put it in everybody's face and let you know that this is the way we do things.
Thank you. You're right. I have some issues, Mike. We all know that. Alliteration, English, I have all sorts of issues in my life. So you know that already.
All right. then let's get to stuff you know about, okay? I want to start talking about what the NFL owners are scheduled to vote on. It's a couple of different things. It seems like this concept for a sky judge continues to change and evolve a little bit. There is the talk of more help from the replay official in the booth. Try it in the preseason. If it works, carry it over to the regular season. They took away the pass interference cleanup from New York because that really got messy. We saw that during the year. Do you like the fact that a replay official upstairs might help a little bit more? Is that a place where you feel comfortable?
I definitely do feel comfortable. You know, I just don't want them to rush into this. I do want more conversation, experimenting, whatever it may be. You just mentioned about the pass interference and them doing away with that because that was a little bit of a failed experience. Well, I feel like because that was kind of rushed into last year as well. We were at the owners' meetings, me and Mike Florio. There was really no talk about it, and all of a sudden it became an issue, and they voted on it, and it went. And as you heard Troy Vincent say many times earlier this week, it just, you know, there was unintended consequences. It wasn't a good watch on TV. Now, I do think in this new gambling era that this is something that will be good for the NFL to ease consumers and bettors and everything out there. But I also think it's going to help just clean up the game in general. So I think it's good that they're starting off experimenting in the preseason. I won't even be mad if they don't want to do it during the 2020 regular season. I want them to do this and do it right. But regardless, yeah, to have that extra guy, extra set of eyes, as you know, the guys are bigger and faster and the game is more chaotic and crazy than ever before. And it's hard for these refs on the field to see everything. So I do think an extra set of eyes to help them out and just be a little bit of a, you know, an angel on their shoulder certainly would help out in a lot of ways.
We've bumped into officials on the field, literally and figuratively for some of us, during NFL games. So we understand firsthand, at that level, there are things you miss that when you're watching back in our viewing room in Connecticut before football night in America, you're like, how can the guy miss that? But only when you're on the field, you can see how a big body can just get in your way and change the whole deal.
No doubt about it. You know, it's tough. And, of course, there's the pressure of the situations, and coaches are yelling at you, right. Players and fans are yelling at you. So it's hard to sit there and expect those referees, like you said, to see everything. You know, again, I know I played quarterback in the NFL, and I might not have been very good at it, but there were certainly times where, you know, I swore on the field I saw holding or I saw pass interference. You know, you'd go back there the next day, watch the film, and go, oh, you know, it really wasn't. Yeah, that was a good call by the ref. Or, man, he really missed that call. So, you know, as you know, it's an imperfect sport. It's never going to be all just right. But I think the NFL would be taking a step in the right direction by just getting another guy there to – be in a calm area where he can see it, no crowd, nobody yelling at him, players not yelling at him, and he can sit there and see replay and everything else and all the TV angles to help out the group on the field.
Clean up the egregious mistake. I think if that's right. The headline of this is what we're trying to do, the methodology will work just fine. Do you hold the mug in your hand during the whole conversation, by the way?
A lot of the times I do. I'm so used to it now because of this new in my hat. I know I hold it, and I needed a little extra pep, so I threw some coffee in here before we went. I got a long day ahead of me still. Got to do the podcast. Got a few other things going on, so I need some energy.
Well, you know, it's like a lefty. You'd be holding a football if you were just talking and just in a quarterback room. So, but the whole hold a cup of coffee and a pen in the same hand is a little too bizarre for this segment, so maybe we'll delve into it in an online world. Let's go to this 4th and 15. So one of the options to replace an onside kick that they'll vote on at the owners today, 4th and 15 from your own 25, if you pick it up, it's a first down. Rich Eisen on his show went through some great stuff of if there's illegal contact, that 5-yard penalty on the opposite side of the field, it's a first down, you get, which means you get the ball. It's just going to change those things. If there's a touchdown scored and there's a penalty on the defense who was scored against for excessive celebration or, you know, something illegal, some taunting of some sort.
Sure.
That gets tacked on. And then you'd be going 4th and 15 from the 40. So you can get the ball at the plus 45-yard line going in. So there are a lot. It's just like a regular play in most cases. Do you like this rule overall as an option to the onside kick?
No, I don't. I'm a traditionalist. I don't know. Okay. No, not totally. I don't. You know, again, first off, what I'm a little worried about is, you know, there's a reason a team might be up two or three scores late in the game. They've dominated the football game. I don't want to make it too easy on a team to come back just because for the sake of, ooh, you know, as a league or as fans, we just want more excitement or we want people to stay to the end of the game to watch it to the very end. Okay, I mean, I understand that. I get it. Listen, I want to be entertained too, but – you know, hey, if one team dominated for 58 and a half minutes, I don't want to necessarily see another team get all these crazy chances to come back and try to win a football game. So I am traditionalist in that way. Am I intrigued by the fourth and 15? Absolutely. I think one of the things that worries me about it, Mike, a little bit, first off, is I think it favors the teams that have built their team around the passing game, right? If I'm the Baltimore Ravens or the San Francisco 49ers, I might go, well, that seems a little bit in favor of Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill, and not us, who has built our game on offensive linemen and tight ends and fullbacks. So I look at that as being a little bit of an unfair competitive advantage. And the other thing I'm more worried about than anything, Mike, and it does a little bit with what you and I know Rich Eisen brought up, is I don't want to see a quarterback throw a ball, make a bad decision in the pocket, throw a ball into a crowd of four defenders, right? The ball falls incomplete. And then the referee calls pass interference on the defense, and they get a first down. And now they get a chance to go down and tie the game. That's rewarding bad play. And that's what will worry me a little bit in this situation as well.
Chris, one of the things that I don't like about it, and I like the rule in general, because the onside kick has become almost obsolete. We're down to 10%. Safety rules, which should be the priority. So I've got that. So we need an alternative of some sort. What I don't like is, how do you defend this play? What if, you mentioned Tyreek Hill, what if Aaron Rodgers scrambles, gets out of the pocket, it's a deep ball downfield, and it goes for a touchdown? I don't like the concept of being able to score a touchdown on that play, as rare as it might be, but we do see 75-yard touchdowns in the NFL. I want to see where, if you complete this ball and the ball goes past midfield on a reception, let's say, you get the ball at the 50-yard line. I don't want to reward you to give you the ball at the 10 if you have a 65-yard gain off this. That would feel unfair, because that's a way, with 5 seconds left in the game, if you onside kick, then you have to run a Hail Mary to try to win the game. Here, the onside kick replacement would be your Hail Mary, and you could win the game on that play. To me, that would be a little too much of an advantage for the offensive team. It's a small one, but I think we could see it happen, because you're going to defend it differently if it's 4 seconds left or if it's 45 seconds left and it's fourth and 15.
I do agree with that. Listen, I hear you. And again, you know, there had to be something done about the onside kick and the way it is. You're right. The percentage chances are way too low. So, you know, with your point, it's certainly a good one. There's two things that come out. First off, the untimed down aspect of this, right? You know, I'm not so sure how much I love that either, to your point, where if there's 1 second left on the clock and now we're not going to time this down, and Mahomes goes back and forth behind the line of scrimmage and then throws a 50-yard bomb, and you go, wow, they still have a chance to kick a field goal, even though that play took 17 seconds, and wow, that doesn't seem fair. So these are things that I would like to talk about. And then to your point on the deep ball, listen, there is some merit there. But I don't know if I agree with you. And listen, I don't mean to disagree with you on your show, because I think you're the freaking man.
Come on.
But here's what –
I don't have a mug. Go ahead.
Okay, you're right. That's right. Who are you? You're no one. The hell with you anyways. But no, I think the other thing where I would disagree with you is the fourth and 15 is going to be hard enough to execute and get the first down as is. Now, if you're telling the defense they don't have to worry about anything behind them – as far as it not really counting as yardage-wise, man, I just think that'll make it almost impossible for the offenses to get the first down that way. Now, I understand you can get the bomb, and you say you place the ball back at the 50-yard line and do that, but I guess my thought is I'd just rather see a regular fourth and 15 play. If they catch a 50-yard bomb, then we just mark it off where they caught the 50-yard bomb at and go from there. Those are my two cents, but – I hear what you're saying with that, and it's certainly a good topic of conversation.
Good, healthy debate. And somewhere, some fantasy football player is asking, do I get the yards on that play? Will that be part of the stats? Stay tuned for that. Hey, last, I need to get into this before I leave, because otherwise I don't get my mug. You're doing your top 40 quarterback countdown, which is an annual joy because everybody takes a shot at you. So you started weighing in. You had two at number 40, and you're kind of moving away. I saw you put Jared Stidham in there, here in that 31 to 40 range. What have you seen and heard and all that other stuff that you think that Stidham is, at the moment, better than Trubisky or Haskins, who we've seen play in the NFL as starters for a significant period of time?
Certainly. Well, we all know that Trubisky has his issues, and I'm not sitting there trying to blame the Bears' offensive failures all on him, but he has his issues as being consistent, a good pocket-passing quarterback. Dwayne Haskins, big-time talent. I just don't know what he is yet. With Jared Stidham, first off, Mike, I thought this was a first-round talent in the draft 2 years ago. And then just what I saw in preseason football last year, very good athlete, can throw the ball all sorts of ways. You know, when we talk about different platforms, sideways, can move around the pocket, has a lot of Tony Romo in his game to me. And I know that New England likes the mental aspect and how he handles himself as a professional too. So I think with all those things, that is what kind of put me or made me put him there at that position. I think this guy's got a big time talent. And I won't be shocked if he's the future and he's still the quarterback of the New England Patriots 7 or 8 years from now too.
Well, it's a great kind of in between OTAs and training camp exercise that you go through every year. It angers people. People get mad at Sims is wonderful. The top 40 quarterback countdown is going to continue here for the next few weeks. Of course, the Chris Sims Unbuttoned podcast available wherever you get your pods. I try a coffee cup and a pen in my left hand. So this is next level. Thank you for teaching
no
me.
No problem.
Today.
I know you're talented. You can
no
pull
logo.
It off.
just the Starbucks, the clean mug that's up in the office here.
Okay.
Starbucks.
All right.
Goodbye. Get out.
That's okay.
See ya.
Be good. Yeah. Cheers. You're the man.
I look forward to my Sims Unbuttoned podcast. Thank you. Chris Sims locked in a room somewhere, which is where he should be. Jeff Burton joins us when we come back. We'll talk NASCAR. Rained out yesterday, back at it today. We're back at it after this. Back here on Lunch Talk Live, it's like every day is a race day. Rained out in Charlotte last night. They'll try to get this fourth Cup Series race on the return back in tonight, weather permitting. Jeff Burton joins us for a couple of minutes on what has been going on with NASCAR. So three Cup Series races in. You got some other Xfinity races and truck races. What do you think so far and what you've been able to see, Jeff, in terms of the quality of racing?
Yeah, I think the races have been really good. The Darlington race, the little bit shorter race that was being threatened by rain, it got the intensity level picked up big time in that race. I think that's what you'll see tonight as well. This is interesting. It's normally Cup races are relatively long, but this has given the sport an opportunity to look at perhaps some shorter races. And the second race at Darlington and then this race tonight are shorter than what they normally are. And it'll be interesting to see how they turn out. Is a shorter race, does it create more excitement? Does it create more drama? Does it put the drivers on immediate need to go be real aggressive? It's fun watching it. And I think it does, actually. I think the shorter races do put on a little bit more excitement early.
What are you hearing from the teams and the drivers as they've kind of done the back and forth with Darlington and now where their shops are in Charlotte? But still, it's a lot of racing in a small period of time. How are you hearing about the wear and tear for everybody so far?
Yeah, so what's being made up from the wear and tear is that they're only at the track for one day, right? So typically a NASCAR weekend would be a Friday, Saturday, Sunday event, or at least a Saturday, Sunday event, or perhaps a Friday, a two-day event at the least. Now we're doing one day. So, and all of these races are within driving distance. So we really aren't comparing apples to apples as far as the grind. It's actually a little bit easier on everyone. And as far as the teams go, the car they ran at Darlington is not the car they plan to run at Charlotte. They can't think like that. You have to assume you're going to wreck and you have to have something else ready. But if you do run well with that car, you don't have a problem with it, you can turn it around and you can take it back to the racetrack. We saw Kevin Harvick's team do that. They went back with the same car one weekend. It's changed the way that they're doing things, but I haven't heard anyone, which is remarkable to me, with all the changes, even with all the protocols, all the things you have to do to get in the racetrack, I haven't spoken to a single person that's complained about anything. It's all been positive.
Well, I think it's a positive sign for sports and an example with NASCAR that other sports will be able to look at how are they doing it. And obviously there are some different unique advantages that NASCAR has compared to a contact sport like football or basketball, but it at least is a positive sign sports-wise. And, Jeff, now that we've been figuring out how to get back on the track, and that's happened, you start to think about competition. You start to look at the standings, and you start to think about, okay, who's a driver who can get on a roll? How important will these stretches of a lot of races in a compressed time be in terms of the longer-term picture of trying to win a cup championship at the end of the year?
You know, I think it's big. Think about Chase Elliott, right? He's been this emotional roller coaster, you know, so being so close to winning races and then having things come up and happen to him. That's a guy that normally you have three or four, you know, you have 7 days to get over it. Now you only have a couple days to get over it. You got to get yourself emotionally ready. On the other side of that, teams that aren't running well, this is a bad time to not be running well. That downward momentum point, it's hard to get it stopped. But some names that I think have done remarkably well during this stretch, I think Chase Elliott, he's really run well, had a chance to win multiple races. Denny Hamlin, obviously, Kevin Harvick, didn't run well at Charlotte, but really, really ran well at both races at Darlington. And Alex Bowman at Hendrick, I think Alex has done really well. And the name you got to keep an eye on, I can't believe I'm getting ready to say this, it's been forever since Jimmy Johnson's won a race, but Jimmy Johnson, you're starting to see him in position to win races. And it's not going to surprise me to see Jimmy Johnson win a race really, really soon.
Yeah, with this being a farewell to the sport, seeing him with a chance the other night, it was like, this would be really cool. It could build on a story that'd be more than a victory tour, almost a farewell tour, be some successful part of this season. Hey, let's put up the schedule real quick here at the back end of this, because you talked about the challenges that the teams had going from Darlington to Charlotte. Now you're going to start moving around a little bit with Bristol, Atlanta, Martinsville, and then Homestead all coming up in the next 3-4 weeks. What kind of challenges will this present for the drivers and the teams now that we get more tracks in the mix?
The biggest thing is the variety of the tracks in regard to how different they are to each other. You look at Charlotte, you know, it's a fast mile and a half. When you go to Bristol, it's a tiny little half mile racetrack. Atlanta's a very low grip racetrack. Then you go to Martinsville, it's the smallest track on the circuit with no banking whatsoever. And then you go to Homestead, where you run right against the wall all the time. Just a variety of tracks, having to get better every single week and trying to build on something. That's what racing is about. I think all sports are, is you go perform, right, and you do things well, you do things poorly, and then you try to improve on it. When the tracks change this vastly, it's hard to know what you're improving on, because when you're going to the track, you have to go with completely different car setup, to completely different cars, completely different mindset from the driver. So remember, what's so important, you know, the NASCAR regular season is just like every other regular season. You're building yourself into what you hope is a championship team. And so you're learning and you're building Lego blocks. You're setting one block on top of the next to hopefully, you know, build a trophy. And you know, by having these races so close together, it's changing the way the teams learn and what they're having to apply to ultimately get into the postseason with a chance to win the championship. And it's just a completely different time. But as in sports go, the best rise to the top, they find a way. And really, that's what we've seen so far this year in the short schedule we've had.
Got that sense during overtime on Sunday when Keselowski won at Charlotte. It felt more like, hey, this is the middle of the season, and we're figuring this out. Not the, hey, good news, we're back. Isn't this a big moment for all of us? And 5 cup races in the next 2.5 weeks, NASCAR is taking advantage of the opportunity. Like, here's a night where I'd be watching, I don't know what, baseball game, a playoff game, Stanley Cup final game. I'll be watching the race in all likelihood tonight. So NASCAR is taking advantage of this opportunity with the lack of sports out there. And Jeff will be talking about it on all of our digital platforms as well. Jeff, thanks. Great to catch up with you. Stay safe.
Thank you, buddy. Good seeing you again.
Jeff Burton there. When we come back, Chris Mullen, jersey retired with the Golden State Warriors, St. John's great, dream team, and doing stuff to help out the people of his home city in New York. Mully coming up after this.
I always thought he was coming back, but a day like that, when you saw, you know, when you saw Michael walking around, say playing golf, or just, he was just so fit, right? So it wasn't a physical thing, but seeing him on the basketball court and playing against Spiro's a really good player. and he was in mid-season form. So for him to do that, I thought at that point in time, it was just a matter of time.
NBC Sports, our regional networks around the country as well, the new podcast called NBC Sports Uncovered Podcast. I'm Back is the title of the first one. It's about Michael Jordan returning and that I'm Back facts and some of the stuff behind that. Chris Mullin had a front row seat for a lot of the Jordan days when he came back. Dream Team, that Last Dance Eastern Conference final with the Pacers. Chris Mullin's now a teammate again, working with NBC Sports Bay Area, and he joins us. Chris, what has it been like to relive all this Jordan era one more time?
Great to see you, Mike. Yeah, the Last Dance has been a trek back in time. And as you mentioned, our careers intersected quite a bit. And that clip you just showed when Michael was taking some time off, as you guys say in the tennis world, too good. He was just too good, and it was unfair that he could show up. He could show up in a practice after playing golf and dominate two of the best players. We had Tim Hardaway and Latrell Sprewell at that time, two great players, and Michael was able to walk on the floor and just dominate.
Chris, the thing that has brought it back to me watching all this stuff about these teams from the 90s is how good multiple teams were. You talked about how good Golden State was, the Run TMC days that you were a part of out there. You look at that Indiana team in 98 in the Eastern Finals, the Utah group that they had to go through, Seattle with Payton and Kemp. There were so many good quality teams. I felt like the teams of that era were better than the teams are right now because the veteran cores were deeper and stayed together longer. How do you see yesterday's basketball compared to the way teams are constructed today?
Yeah, I think, Mike, probably the biggest factor, what you said, was free agency. There wasn't as much movement with the star players. You built your teams around those guys. You would run in veterans to try and help them get over the top, but the core stayed the same, which helped chemistry, helped teamwork. A lot of the coaches stayed together with those guys. And the other thing is, you know, it was way more physical. You know, now it's still mm-hmm. I think I love watching the game, but it doesn't slow down as much in the playoffs. If you watch that Last Dance, those episodes, the Bulls were winning a lot of their playoff games in the 80s, you know, and so they right. were able to win with defense because of Scotty and Michael's dominance defensively. But if it got into a high-scoring affair, their triangle offense was a free-flowing, beautiful thing to watch. So they could win both ways.
Mm-hmm. Chris, for your era and your unbelievable one out of every three, better than one out of every three, three-pointers made. You didn't shoot a lot of three-pointers, like 2.5 or 3 per game. What would you have done in this era where it's like, hey, go shoot any three you can at any time? Where would you have put those records, man?
Well, it's a what-if, right? But I think my question is, why didn't we do that more, right? We kept driving to the basket and getting knocked on the floor and, you know, so I'm sitting here now with the artificial hip, you know, reconstructed knee. It would have been a lot easier just to shoot three-point shots. But that's on us. We weren't smart enough. But I'll tell you what, I live in the Bay Area, and to watch,
right?
You know, again, in that Last Dance, you see they were messing around after shoot-around, and Michael was shooting from the hash mark, right? They were all missing, and Michael stepped up and knocked that down, and everyone went crazy. Right. That's a catch and shoot play for Steph Curry and Klay Thompson these days. So that's how much the game has changed. Yes. They've redefined what an acceptable shot is. And I talked about this yesterday with somebody. I think two of the biggest differences in the NBA was when they went to private airplane travel. It helps you recover quicker. And now all these teams have upgraded their facilities. So back in the day, when I first came out to Golden State, you know, we'd get a phone call in the morning to tell us if and where practice would be, whether it be Pacific High School, the Mormon Temple, the Boys Club of America. Now, you know, you get your nice team practice in, and then they have the ability to get back and work on those shots. So, look, any coach,
right?
If you can make the shot, it's a good shot. It doesn't matter where it comes from. So these guys put so much time in. They take such great care of their bodies. In turn, the evolution of the game has moved further and further beyond the three-point line.
Really fascinating perspective, and it's not that long a time. It's a 20-year, 2-plus-decade change in the game. Before we leave you, we always talk about this. your roots there at St. John's and Xaverian and Brooklyn and all that stuff. You're such a New Yorker at heart, and that's where we connected for me growing up in Queens. You've done something really neat during the pandemic with an app called VidSig just to try to get some of the real frontline heroes connected with some of those, quote, heroes from the sports world. Tell me about what you've been doing, because it's really neat.
Yeah, it's a local company. A friend of mine, Jeff Dudem, actually created VidSig to help out then Willie McCovey, who was his godfather. And Willie McCovey, as you would know, Mike, an incredible Hall of Fame baseball player, and had a hard time getting around to do his autograph shows. So it was basically a way to connect Willie with his fans via like we are right now, FaceTime, and get up close and personal. So what Jeff has done, he's got some local Bay Area athletes, and we're connecting with, you know, the first-line workers, whether it be nurses, grocery workers, all the first-line heroes that are helping us live our lives through this pandemic. So it's a small way to connect, and at this point in time when we're isolated so much like we are here, Mike, it's just nice to be able to connect with other people that from your past and give a positive feedback for the day, just trying to get through the day.
Well, great that you've been helping out in that way and connecting with some heroes back in New York. It's so important in so many different ways. Your career has had so many interesting turns in the front office, some broadcasting, coaching at St. John's, now back as a broadcaster. Do you still have that connection and love with basketball anytime, any way that you're able to touch the game? Does it still get you going the way it did 40, 45 years ago, Chris?
No question. I love watching. I love talking about it, analyzing it. And I do the home games for the Warriors. So I love getting over there early, watching the guys warm up. And it just gives you a great feeling stepping in the building. That never goes away, Mike, the competitive spirit. Yeah. But I got to tell you, I love watching the league now. I love the style of play. I think our star plays. We're blessed here with Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. Not only the way they play, the way they handle themselves. And I'm proud of all those young players. I think Adam Silver's doing a great job managing this time through the pandemic. And hopefully at some point we'll get back and we'll be talking NBA basketball soon.
Yeah, man, it's going to be really fascinating to see whenever next season restarts, some health, how the Warriors are. Are they able to pick up and make one more little run with this core group? Molly, it's great to see you. It's been far too long. Keep doing great stuff out there at NBC Sports Bay Area, and we'll see you down the line.
Great to see you, Mike. Thanks so much. Be well.
You too, Chris. When we come back, there is another sport that is ready to return this weekend with live competition and finish their season. And one of the stars of Supercross is Eli Tomac, and he's going to join us to talk about getting back on the bike. Look forward to talking to him right after this. Ten events so far this year, Supercross, the 450, the top level of the competition, and Eli Tomac has won five of them, and their sport gets back on the bike here coming up this week, and Eli Tomac, the leader in the standings at this point as they get restarted, joins us. I was going to ask you how often have you been on the bike, but from what I understand, you were out on your bike this morning, is that right?
That's right. We're out about an hour and a half outside of Salt Lake, just getting in some training in before the weekend, and excited to get this going. You know, we've been off and for almost 3 months now, you know, for obvious reasons. Yeah. Pretty cool to get going here.
Yeah, we've had people join us while they were driving. It would be a little bit tougher to do the whole FaceTime on the bike, so we understand the phone conversation at this point. Eli, when do you get back on the bike? Do you pick right up where you left off? Is there rust? We've been asking everybody in every sport. I mean, there's some really scary stuff that you guys do in competition. How much of that can you build into your practice and your preparation?
You know, most of us, you know, we can rely on our past riding, you know, pretty well. The question is if you can go the distance. That's what a lot of guys have to train on is going the distance. And we go 20 minutes plus a lap in Supercross. So that's what you got to keep sharp, is just like your general muscles, you know. And within a, you know, 2 or 3 days, I'd say your brain starts warming up more if you take a, you know, a few weeks off the motorcycle.
I will be very candid with you. I have not seen a lot of the live races. I will watch this weekend because there are other sports that I normally cover or watch and they're not on. So sell me on this. Why would I be interested in watching your sport live? What should I be looking for in the competition?
I mean, live, it's a whole different deal. It's just, you know, from a TV, you don't get the perspective of the track itself. So, you know, that's the bummer about not having, you know, fans in attendance. But if you go there in person, once we get all this resolved, you know, how far we jump our motorcycles and just the, you know, the raw competition of itself and just the feeling. And, you know, we have really good energy in our sport, you know, and this, you know, just the battle from green flag to checkered.
7 races in 22 days ahead. But you have been keeping occupied here during the pandemic. I understand you and your girlfriend Jessica had a baby girl. So the obvious update is, how are your diaper skills at this point?
Hey, I don't want to pat myself on the back too much, but I'm getting pretty pro at it. You know, I can bust those things out. So huge blessing for us there. That was one good blessing for us, as we had our daughter on a Sunday, and that would have been on a travel day coming back from the race in Las Vegas. So that was probably the only positive out of all this mess was being able to be there for the birth.
Well, Lev's a little cutie there, so congratulations to you and your girlfriend Jessica, and we wish you all the best in parenting going forward. How about the 7 races in 22 days? This is obviously a physically demanding sport. We see you go off the jumps and how hard you land, and there's got to be a toll on your body. What will this be like to bang out 7 of these races in 3 weeks in a day?
That's going to be the test for us. And we're at elevation in Salt Lake, so when you're on a motorcycle, you know, you have a little bit of loss of power. That's just what happens when you know, come up in elevation. And then, you know, a lot of guys train at sea level, and then you have to, you know, we're up here at 4,000 or 5,000 feet at elevation. So, you know, cardio-wise, we're going to be pushed to the limit. Like you said, most of the time we're racing just Saturday nights, right, and then back-to-back weeks. But this go-around, we're doing Sunday and Wednesday. So recovery is going to be key, especially, you know, probably 3 races into this.
Monster Energy Supercross, you see NBCSN for a lot of the coverage, but on the big network, 4 Eastern on Sunday after the first hour on NBCSN. Everything happening in Utah to wrap up their season. Eli Tomac won 5 of the 10 races, so keep an eye on him as you watch on Sunday. Eli, thank you for joining us. We wish you all the best, not just with the baby, but closing out the rest of this season.
Thanks for having me on, everyone. We'll see you.
Our pleasure. Eli Tomac joining us as he trains on a bike somewhere in the mountains, getting set to race in Utah. The big headline of this day in terms of sports returning and more of the pieces in place, the Premier League announcing, not announcing yet, but widely reported, we wait their announcement. Matches could begin Wednesday, June 17th. A first full round of matches, a full set of fixtures, if you will, for the proper parlance would be June 20 and 21, with the target date of wrapping up the rest of the season, all the matches needed to get a full season, August 1-2, the big thing they have to do there. Obviously, Liverpool's so far ahead, we got to figure out relegation and all the other leagues. Rebecca Lowe will join us to talk more about that tomorrow. I'll bring a tea kettle so Rebecca can teach me how to make a proper cup of English breakfast tea. And she's going to join the Rich Eisen Show, which starts right now. Thanks for watching. We'll see you tomorrow.